Hi, everyone. I'm Greg Harton. Today, I've got a recent interview with Washington County Judge Patrick Deakins. We talked about his push for conversations on developing a regional jail to deal with overcrowding of jails in area counties. And we also discussed his hopes to get a new zoning ordinance passed affecting the unincorporated areas of Washington County. But first, let's get an update on some recent news developments regarding jail space and incarceration in Washington County. Welcome to the Speaking of Arkansas podcast. Judge Deakins sat down with me a few days ago, but just before we finalized the podcast, there were some new developments. First, sadly, Deakins announced the upcoming closure of the Northwest Arkansas Crisis Stabilization Unit. That unit was one of four championed by former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. They were to be places where people in a mental health crisis could go for help instead of ending up in jail. It's working in three other locations, but for some reasons, the unit in Fayetteville never got traction with referring agencies like law enforcement, the healthcare community, and social service agencies, and was hardly even known as an option among families and friends of people it might have helped. Deakins also announced his intention to end a lease allowing the state to use the former Washington County Jail on College Avenue in Fayetteville. That building has, since 2008, housed women prison inmates who are approaching their release dates. The move, according to Deakins, is an attempt to renegotiate what the state pays to use the facility. Deakins said he'd like to get more money that could help cover the costs to operate the current county jail. Deakins, as you'll hear in today's podcast, says the state seriously underpays the county for housing state prisoners backed up in the county jail because the state lacks prison space. But Deakins also said the county could take the space over and again use it as jail space for county inmates, in addition to the much larger jail in South Fayetteville that opened in 2005. I'll link a story about these developments in the information attached to this podcast, but let's get going with my interview with Washington County Judge Patrick Deakins. Judge Deakins, thanks for joining me today.
I appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Harton.
Let me take a moment to set this up. County judges are not really what people think about when they are talking about judges. Judges are the kind of folks in black robes who preside over criminal trials, and they sentence people to jail or prison. But county judges are elected administrators. There's 75 of them in all across Arkansas, one in every county. I wanted to be clear about that today because we're going to talk about both kinds of judges, as well as the challenge that has for years plagued the two largest counties in Northwest Arkansas, Benton and Washington. Officials in both counties have tried to figure out ways to deal with jail overcrowding for years. Proposals have been made to expand jail facilities, and so far, at least the ones that have gone to the public for a vote have not succeeded. In Judge Deakins' recent State of the County address, he laid out the way he sees it, and here's a bit of what he had to say.
For years, we have been preached to by the state about the partnership we share. But I believe over the years that partnership has been laid bare as a one-way street. We're reaping the consequences of the seeds we have sown, and it's past time for us to demand a better harvest for our labor. I've witnessed our detention officers and public suffer while we're waiting on the state to solve its prisoner backlog and to address the painfully slow pace in our criminal courts. The coffers of Washington County taxpayers are being robbed by housing state inmates and not receiving fair reimbursement. And in dire efforts to preserve our justice system at home, Washington County admirably but regrettably stepped up to financially supplement the state's responsibilities in our justice system. While our taxpayers bear the burdens of these costs, which add up to millions annually, and while the state touts billion-dollar surpluses, our citizens are left to deal with the consequences of the state's shortcomings. No more. No more. From this point forward, we demand honest performance measures so we can monitor the effectiveness of our criminal justice system and also any potential reforms we want to implement. And we as a county will investigate every opportunity to bring our taxpayer funds home to ensure local needs can be met with local solutions. And I need the Quorum Court's help in standing up and being a loud and immovable voice in negotiation with our counterparts in Little Rock. For many years, many of us have pondered the feasibility of a regional jail concept here in Northwest Arkansas. The concept's being utilized around the nation and has the potential to solve not only our jail overcrowding problems, but also presents the potential to collaborate with our neighbors and ensure regional stability. There's a possibility to gain economies of scale with our county jails while also increasing our sophistication with self-improvement and health programs for our detainees.
So this is probably the first time that I've had a guest actually do the setup for for themselves. But I wanted to play that because you really did cover a lot of the territory that you're dealing with. And it was interesting to me because you sounded a bit defiant in that particular segment of the State of the County address. Tell me why you kind of felt that way and you know what it is about this issue that makes you feel like this is something that you feel obviously strongly about.
I'm incredibly passionate about it. And the reason is I think it has real life consequences for all of our citizens right here. You know, not only now, I think for years we were told, well, this is a Benton, Washington County problem. This is a statewide problem at this point. And, I think you as a leader can only see the suffering that's going on down in our detention center. And then the suffering that's going on out in our public. You know, I'm a firm believer now that it's starting to feel different. I read your publication quite regularly, and I think we're starting to see some of the results of, once again, the seeds that we've sown here. And I do feel neglected by the state. I do feel like that, you know, our overcrowding problem at the jail, if it was just merely an overcrowding problem, might be quote-unquote easy to solve. But what I think I've convinced myself of working with some really talented people in our office is that these problems are way upstream, and we are throwing these problems on our deputies and the sheriff's department, and they are having to suffer through those consequences when really, in a lot of ways, they have the least amount of influence in the issues that they're seeing, the results. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm the Washington County judge, but I'm also a taxpayer. And I'm also a husband and father. And so, when I think about what do I want this area to be, I want it to be what it is now. And I want to try to preserve that. So, yeah, I get very passionate about it. And I think it's time that somebody step up. And I really do feel that the taxpayers voted us in here for a reason. And I think the definition of insanity has kind of been played out for years, and it's time to change things up.
So you talk about these problems for the people that don't go to quorum court meetings or necessarily keep up with the jail issues. Help kind of identify from your perspective what these problems are.
Yeah, we have an incredible backup in our criminal justice system. I think our courts move way too slowly. I think they're understaffed. I mean, I look at our public defender's office, I look at our prosecutor's office. I think they've got fine individuals working in those offices. They're doing the best they can. They need more resources. We need to demand efficiency in our courts. I look at the way our circuit courts operate, and I see a lot of inefficiency in it. And one of the things that's been very troubling to me is we need to have metrics. We need to all decide on what we want to measure and measure it. Because I'm a true believer is you can't manage what you don't measure. And it's incredibly difficult to get statistical information out of the courts. They pride themselves on saying, well, all this is public. Well, it's all public, but you can't hardly stitch it all together in mass, right? And so some of the preliminary data that we're seeing from these courts that we can pull and put together is very troubling. You know, I don't know that most people can realize that. And that's the part I want to try to highlight to the public. It's easy to focus on the overcrowded jail and think, build more jail. I don't think any of us agree that that's the solution. There's no silver bullet in this process, and that definitely is not one. But, you know, just a couple things. We don't have misdemeanor justice in Northwest Arkansas anymore, okay? We are now parsing the word of what violent felon means. You know, we're trying to say we are saving our jail bed space for violent felons. Okay, well, the more we get backed up, and the more our jails overcrowded, now we're starting to try to me, finesse that word of what violent is. And that's very troubling to me. And so misdemeanor justice is important because that's the first time, if you're the first-time offender, maybe you have access to our criminal justice system and maybe you can you can seek reforms. You know, so a couple things that bother me is there are over 170,000 unserved warrants in the state of Arkansas right now. So those people are out. They have violated the law. They owe their debt to society. We're not doing anything with those. So that's out the that cow is out of the barn. We're there now. Then you start digging into, well, what how long does it take if I were to violate the law? How long does it take to dispose of my case? Some of those statistics will blow your mind. I mean, the average in Washington County is 864 days to resolve my felony. And of course, that's a more serious crime. But 864 days, that's not fair to the victims. It's not fair to the offender. It's not fair to society. And a lot of those people are out right now, you know, off on their own recognizance or on bail right now. And so what I think it's time to do is have a real honest conversation and hold the mirror up and say, what are we doing? Those are the problems that I really, really see. Then also we're forcing our deputies and our law enforcement officers in the field to make decisions. You know, if they come into contact with somebody who has made an arrestable offense, many, many times they're in the field at that moment saying, is this worth taking this person to jail and burning a jail bed day? I don't think that's fair to those officers in the field. I don't think it's fair to our society. That very much troubles me. Then also you have now where, you know, the sheriff within his powers is deciding who he releases from jail because he has also standards that he has to follow. I think that's incredibly unfair too. We have people who are elected to do these very jobs and they're not. I'm very critical of the pace at which our courts move. So there's an acronym, you'll hear this a lot, FTA, failure to appear. So we've arrested somebody, they have committed an offense, and through whatever means, own recognizance or bail, we've released those people. They don't show back up for their court dates. Okay, that is a statistic that we should measure, and that's very troubling. But to me, what is the more troubling statistic is continuances. How many times are these attorneys and their clients showing up to court with whatever, you know, I hate to use the excuse or whatever issue they have, and that gets pushed off. And so that is a big deal for us too, because that's another area where the state has failed us. You know, you have a right as a defendant to a mental health evaluation if they deem that appropriate. Good luck getting a mental health evaluation any reasonable time soon, okay? The other thing is a lot of times in evidentiary cases, we're waiting for the crime lab. Well, the crime lab's backed up. You know, we were very excited they put a crime lab up here in Northwest Arkansas in Lowell. Guess what? Already backed up. We're already seeing those numbers climb in terms of the turnaround rates of those. There's a lot of these issues that I believe lie at the feet of the state. And I think for too many years, they've just been neglected. And I think part of my frustration that opened too is we're down here. Sheriff and I are trying to make budgetary decisions. We're trying to decide if we can give our deputies adequate raises. You know, these are the decisions we're having to grapple with. And at the same time, the state, like I said, is touting their billion-dollar surpluses and that kind of stuff. Well, that's all fine. And, you know, I don't want to pay any more taxes than anybody else. But I think it's high time we start prioritizing what is important to us. And that's why I'm very grateful for this opportunity. I want to lay this out for the public so they can see it, you know, so they can understand it and then help us solve solutions.
So some people may not know, you know, the county, the reason you're involved is the county jail, really. I mean, the county jail is the county's responsibility in all of this. And you're talking about the criminal justice system, which has a huge impact on the jail, but you don't have ultimate control over as a county judge. It is a system that is, it's almost like a hybrid. I mean, it's a state system. The county funds certain portions of it, and how that's developed over the decades is probably a story unto itself. In that counties, I think, have had to step up and kind of supplant what they get from the state to keep their justice system going. So, you know, we've got these two different things. We've got the jail aspect of it and how many beds we actually have to put people in, which has been a big part of the discussion in Washington and Benton counties. And I know you're not speaking for Benton County today, but and then you've got the criminal justice system. So let's kind of segment those. You have talked a little bit about a regional jail concept. So it sounds to me like you do acknowledge that additional jail space is part of this this equation. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, and you know, I've been, I think you're my fifth county judge since I've been in Northwest Arkansas, so 20, almost 30 years. And I've heard regional jail talked about several times through those years. I think your predecessor, when he first came into office, mentioned regional jail. And I think that was the last time I heard it, you know, and it's you know, not a reflection of him. It's a reflection of the inertia of the issue that. So, just tell me, and there are different definitions. When you talk about a regional jail, what are we talking about?
To me, what that is would be a public facility, to where we all as counties, through several different mechanisms, could invest in that. Maybe we're reimbursing the facility for the jail beds we're using to fund it. This is occurring in other areas of the nation. What I'll say about the regional jail concept is it very much intrigues me. I don't know if it's a silver bullet, but we're not having conversations about that concept either. Does it make sense here? Could we make it work? You know, some of the things initially that I see up, there might be economies of scale. Also, what I want to really touch on is, and this is what gets misconstrued, I think, a lot with some of the people in the public, is nobody in the criminal justice system that I talk to is saying we don't want to have alternatives to just prison or reform activities. They're saying we absolutely need to do that. But right now, we are in such a triage state of where we're at with our felonies and that kind of thing. So I think, you know, that mental health's a huge issue. We all know drug abuse is a huge issue. And what we're saying is we want to have facilities that can handle those, treat those, and get them in the right paths other than just prison. I think a regional jail could really accommodate that a lot. You know, why would we all go out and reinvent the wheel if we could all go together and get those types of things? Once again, I think it's time we had the conversation and we'd be open and honest. And I'll be honest about this. There's a lot of pushback against that. Mm-hmm. Localities, by their very much nature, you know, they don't want to put in with other localities, if you will. So, you know, it's a hard thing for us to talk about. All I want to do is have the conversation.
Yeah, it's. Have you had any conversations with some of the regional leaders to give you any indication that this time that conversation might be different?
I am very lucky right now to have a wonderful working relationship with Sheriff Cantrell. He's open to having the conversation. I think that's very dynamic for a county sheriff. I think some of our neighboring counties are very open to that. Some of the smaller ones, I think, where you run into issues are the larger ones. And so, I'm being told, hey, we have a chicken and egg problem with that issue. You know, I'm being told, well, we're not convinced that that's a solution. And I'm over here saying, I'm just asking for the conversation. And so until we can get over that hump, I'm going to continue to push for it because to push for the conversation to see if it's realistic.
So one of the things that always seems to crop up, an issue of concern when we start talking about regional jail. There's been one that's kind of been in the works down in South Arkansas, Bradley and Drew counties, for 5 years or so, and it's just not gotten off the ground. And it's a private corporation that they've been working with, which gives a lot of people some heartburn. Is that part of the conversation? Because people do freak out about the whole private prison sort of scenario.
I've never gotten to the point of where I thought the private was an avenue to go into. What I'm talking more about is where we might have a regional commission, where there's a board of directors, and we're doing this from a public-facing standpoint. You know, I've used examples like Beaver Water District, XNA. I mean, I know those are completely different industries, but we've done this before, this broad concept, and I think we could do it again. Those are the types of facilities I'm talking about in Virginia, other parts of the other nation. Those are public facilities. I do think there's a lot of pitfalls when you start getting into the privatization of jails and prisons. And so, no, I'm not down that avenue yet of thinking that's a realistic solution to this.
I know, you know, in the past, it's just, it's very difficult to get county leaders, particularly who have to be involved in this, to think in terms of, seeing it as a benefit to essentially see, I mean, their funding's not going to go down in terms of jail expense, more than likely, but their authority over a regional jail would be shared. And
yeah,
man, that's a tough hill to climb.
It particularly gives sheriffs heartburn, you know, because constitutionally they're in charge of the safety and welfare of those inmates when they're in their custody, and I understand that. Once again, I think that's something that we could talk through. I can't be convinced that the county sheriff in Benton County and the county sheriff in Washington County have differing goals with that regard in terms of the safety and welfare, or any of our counties. You know, when I'm talking regional, I think everybody automatically assumes the two big counties up here. You know, but I'm also talking about, you know, Carroll, Crawford, Franklin, Madison, these other counties around us. I mean, I think we live in a technology age now where that could be very feasible to do that, you know. And maybe we missed the point. The thing that concerns me about this is if the state doesn't have prison bed space, those inmates back up into the county jails. And that's where I was talking about the states robbing us for millions of dollars a year, because they're not reimbursing us for that. So they're collecting our tax dollars at the state level to do what they're promised to do, but they're not returning those to us as our jail beds fill up.
Yeah, these are just broad numbers just from recollection over the years. But I know that our jail space, you know, when you calculate the cost, daily cost of an inmate, mm-hmm. it's you probably have more current figures, but I've seen $60, $70, $80 per day per inmate. And the reimbursement, it has gone up in recent years. I can remember when it was $20-something dollars a day, mm-hmm. and I think it's maybe
40.
$40. Yeah.
So I was working with my sheriff on this the other day, you know, kind of just tossing numbers around. He was using a number of $63 a day as our cost.
Okay.
I think that's extremely low. I think, you know, we both agreed we probably need to put some elbow grease into that and try to come up with what we think is the accurate figure. But when we looked at the state jail bed days for last year, 2023, and we took the difference between the 63 and the 40, and we multiplied out, it's close to $2 million a year that our taxpayers are having to bear the brunt of. At the same time, we're not arresting and being able to detain the people that we're supposed to be. And this is important, too, and I always say this. There's a difference between a jail and a prison, and there should be. And I think, in, you know, the common lexicon, we're using that out on the street is the same thing. Those are very different facilities. And so not only do we have the public safety aspect of that, the financial aspect of that, but now we have the safety within the facility aspect of that, to where we're having a prison when it should be jail. And the major difference there is you can be held in jail with the presumption of innocence. When you're in the prison, you are adjudicated. You are guilty. And so to mix those two populations is very problematic for a lot of different reasons I'm sure your listeners can understand.
So I think a lot of people misunderstand they think that, okay, if state prisoners are not paying the bills, why do you accept them? And this one thing I've learned over the years is it's not that you're taking prisoners from the prison system. These are people who have been adjudicated here in our jurisdiction, and they're sitting in the jail waiting for space in the prison system. Is that right?
In the prison system, that's correct.
Okay.
In Washington County, that number can range at any given day from 120 to 150 inmates. Those are very valuable bed days. Statewide, that jail backups over 2,000 inmates or detainees. You know, and so here's the deal, too. When you look at the problems we have in the criminal justice system, you look at the state inmate backup in our jail beds, you look at all these issues, okay, now my job as county judge is to try to project and forecast what size of jail do we need. I mean, we always use the analogy of we're building hospitals and schools. At some point, we have to be honest with ourselves and think that as our population grows, you know, we just saw a statistic, you know, 2050, we're going to be a lot of people here the jail is going to have to grow. Those are not, all those people coming and moving into the area are not the, you know, there's going to be some criminal element in that. Okay. That the water is so muddy that we cannot forecast what the jail beds we need because the system is so unhealthy. And I hope that makes sense to people. I can't bring a responsible and adequate request to the taxpayers if that's where we got. Or, you know, and I'm not saying the solution to this is to raise taxes. We'll do everything we can to avoid that, absolutely. But I can't even spend the tax money that we have now in a responsible way until I can understand what inputs we actually have. And I hope that makes – I hope I'm articulating
that. It does. The difficulty with that is, you know, the problem is real. I mean, the sheriff is – I mean, we're seeing this every day where people who you could argue should be in jail are out committing additional crimes. You know, I'm sure there are some people who don't go on to commit other crimes, but you know, we know there's a revolving door in a lot of cases with some folks. So I mean, that's an immediate thing. We've been talking about this for years. You know, what is it? I guess what good can we say about the situation right now? Is there some relief?
I'm having trouble finding it. I think the relief is that we finally maybe have gotten the attention of the state legislatures. I think Governor Sanders sees the problem. I think there's leadership within the state that sees the problem. I think it's also, you know, it's kind of a sad tragedy that what was an issue in the more populated areas of the state and people wrote it off and said, well, they're prosperous up there, they should handle it themselves, has now become a statewide issue. And so there's a collective thought process behind that. And so that's the hope it gives me now. But then you also see the controversy and the dynamics that are going on between the governor's office and the Board of Corrections. And so maybe that's what's so frustrating to me. And you're right, these consequences are on us right now. And that's why, you know, in the open that you took of mine, you can say, well, he's passionate or frustrated or insert whatever word you want to say. Yeah, I am trying to ring the alarm bells about if we knew the solution today and started on it, we are going to have this is going to get worse before it gets better. And that's what really worries me. And that goes back to what I'm saying. It's starting to feel different. You know, we're starting to see things in the crime around this area that I think are very much warning bells. And people are telling us this is going to get worse unless we do something right now. And I just need the public's help. And I need, you know, I think leadership in the county is very focused on this now. We just need understanding. And I'm not trying to, as much as I can, I'm not trying to be dramatic or try to scare people. And I know that's what it sounds like, but I don't know another way to articulate this than to say, what do we want? Do we want what we're currently getting, or do we want something different? You know.
Okay, I'll be back in just a minute with more with County Judge Patrick Deakins.
If you're enjoying this podcast, consider a newspaper subscription to the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette or the River Valley Democrat Gazette. We have a special offer for our podcast listeners, so visit nwaonline.com/nwapodcast to get started. You can also click the subscribe button on our websites, nwaonline.com and rivervalleydemocratgazette.com, or call us at 479-684-5509 and be sure to say that you're a podcast listener. Now back to the show.
So, Judge Deakins, you've addressed some of your concerns about the court system. And I can remember, 20 years ago, I did a story that referred to kind of molasses in the court system, you know, just the very creeping nature of it. And even back then, it was same sort of thing. It was the state crime lab. It was... you know, and I'm trying not to be cynical here, you know, but it's, you know, we've been down this road before. As I said earlier, you're not in charge of the court system. So what concrete things is it that you feel like you can do to get the ball moving on that? You've had this criminal justice panel that has not achieved what it, I think everybody kind of set out wanting it to achieve. It seems like there's been a lot of talk, I guess, a lot of discussion, but I'm not sure I see a lot of change. There is like mental health court coming. There are those kinds of specialty courts that help with substance abuse and veterans court, and those sorts of things. But in terms of the fundamental questions of how our system operates, how are you going to tackle that?
I think you have to try to persuade, and if not persuade, shame. And the way you do that is through data and metrics. I think we have to be better about that. I haven't found the solution for that yet in terms of how do we do that. Like, I don't suppose it's a state legislature solution. I don't think they can tell the courts, hey, you need to start tracking these numbers. I don't know. Maybe they can. That's the next conversation I want to have with some of our state leadership. But I think that's really where we start. And that's going to give us some honest answers of where we can start applying our resources and our time. I will be honest, too. There's no more difficult person to deal with than a circuit judge. In terms of they are very open and honest that you're not going to make me do anything. You know, I'm here. I'm in this position, and I understand that. I think they have a responsibility to be independent and stuff, but I also think we could very much help them in terms of like, okay, we're assuming this is the problem, but the data is showing us this. And not only I think can the data, you know, there's a lot of metrics out there. The time to case disposition, we talked a little bit of that. How many cases do we have? All that kind of stuff. And those metrics exist. We're just not applying them now. And I think we need to try to force that issue so that we know where we're at. And not only where we're at now, but then whatever these reforms are that we think we should implement, are those having the desired impact? Right now, we don't have any of that. Honestly, anything we implement, we're just kind of watching this black box and then hope what pops out of it is the desired impact. And that's not efficient or good for anyone. And so that's the only solution I have right now that we should pursue is these metrics. And like I went back to earlier in the conversation, those are very hard to get. The cynic in you would tell me they're hard to get on purpose. I won't go there yet. I think there's a lot of dedicated people in this process, and I can't believe that they wouldn't want it to be better. And I think there's, of course, anytime you start getting into a system, there's this nature to think, well, they're being critical of me and I don't want to, have that kind of criticism. We're here to help, you know, as a county, whatever we can do. And I think there's a lot of things we can do as a state. I think these are very obtainable. I think we are tracking the data in granular form. We need to mass this up, you know, and you get pushback at every angle. Well, this person's due a little bit of confidentiality. Okay, I'm not asking for who it is or what, you know, I'm asking for what are the 30,000 feet above numbers. I think the general public would be shocked at how little of that data exists. My office has done a little bit of that the best way we can. Of course, we're just laymen. What we are doing, the general public could do. I mean, that's where we're at. You know, we've put this data on our website, WashingtonCountyAR.gov. I invite the public to go out there. We update that regularly. We're also, it's an iterative process. You know, we're adding metrics to that. We're removing them. And so I think we need to get more people focused on that and more people to look at those types of solutions.
So I know you've, I'll touch on something that perhaps gets under your skin a little bit, but, you know, there are some people in Washington County and Benton County, too, that are very active. They are almost at every quorum court meeting talking to you about issues. Beth Koger got elected as a quorum court member after years of being part of an organization that, you know, I've heard from them, you know, we want data-driven solutions. But it seems very combative as far as the relationship there between that group. I think in your State of the County address, you commented that this issue has for too long been driven by activists. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that, I'm like, okay, well, when do you define somebody as activist versus citizen? And so help me to understand that dynamic, because I hear similar things from both of you in terms of the data, wanting to kind of follow the data, but you know, kind of very different perspectives on it.
Yeah, I think for me, the difference there is what are your words and what are your actions? I'm open for honest discussion. I think that's incredibly important. The issue I have with some of those groups is they're very anti-law enforcement. They have been unequivocal to me personally that they are never going to agree to more jail. beds. And I think that's a non-starter for me. I mean, I think that's got to be, like we mentioned before, that's got to be one of the legs of this stool of solutions or whatever. That's just going to have to be part of the conversation. And so, yes, I understand they want data. One of the main drivers of why we took the time and resources of our public funding to come up with the data that we did, because I think they very much misrepresent the data. I understand that's a personal opinion, but I think I've been taught that through working with them for a number of years. We used to be on somewhat the same page, and very much so we've seemed to move away from each other a lot. The reason I have such an issue with individuals and groups like that is because I think they are mischaracterizing. They're cherry-picking the data that they want that comes up with the solution. So they say, well, we want data-driven metrics. Oh, and we've already got some solutions teed up. Well, okay, well, I don't even have I can't obtain the data that we need. And so it's very disingenuous for me to hear, we want data. Oh, and by the way, we want all this. And then also, their solutions always come with huge price tags. And once again, I'm not saying maybe that's not the right way to go. Maybe that's not where we want to put our public resources. But until we shore up these other problems that we have, it's just like me trying to forecast how many jail beds we need. I don't think it's realistic to start talking about some of these pretrial solutions and things like that until we know, one, that that's exactly what's needed, and two, how do we know once we implement it that it's doing what it's supposed to do? The other thing I have problems with is their solutions are let more people out. This is an extremely important point that I want people to understand. They mischaracterize this all the time. There are not individuals being held in our jail on petty misdemeanors or small-time drug offenses, okay? Those days are long gone. The only individuals left in our jail, once again, are those violent felony cases, because that's the only space we have. You know, and I want to get that through to people's heads. You got a couple joints in your pocket and you're walking around Dixon Street, the cops aren't taking you to jail for that. And that's the perception that they're giving people. You know, they're also... Identity politics plays a big part. Politics in general needs to be removed from this conversation, and especially identity politics. You know, we always go back and we want to talk about race or this or that. Well, okay, I think we want to always keep that in consideration, but to paint our law enforcement officers as rolling around Washington County and even in our municipalities, you know, we're talking from a county perspective, but this is also our law enforcement communities within our cities, you know, and if you're black or brown, you're going to jail. I've worked around these individuals for a while now. I've observed them. That's not the reality. And so those people are dangerous to the conversation, because what I hear from our law enforcement leaders is, hey, we want to be honest. If we're doing something wrong, let's fix it, you know, if something's brought to our attention. But to ostracize them from the conversation from the word go, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to build the coalitions that you need to solve this problem and get a widespread long-term solution. So that's my issue with it.
Sure. Oh, okay. So before we move on to just a couple of other topics I wanted to talk to you about, is there anything else involving the jail and or criminal justice system you wanted to touch on?
I want to thank all of our law enforcement community. I am still humbled and honored that those ladies and gentlemen put on the badge and choose to represent us and serve us. And I want them to hear that we're here to help them, and we're so thankful for them. And if we ever get to the point where we cannot, and it's tenuous right now, to where individuals don't want to come and serve us in that capacity, that's when we're really going to be in trouble. Unfortunately, I think we've seen that in other areas of the country where the criminal justice system's gone awry and these individuals are having to deal with the consequences of it. And at a certain point, they say, it's not worth my life. It's not worth it for the money. I can go home to my children. I don't want that to happen here. Those individuals are absolutely the basis of it. And I just want to give thanks to them and tip of the hat.
Sure. So on a completely separate issue, very interesting county issue you've recently talked about, and we've done a story. I think Tom Sissom did a story with you about this goal of creating an ordinance for zoning within the county. Which I can tell you, you know, over the years, you know, you kind of bring that up down at the Association of Arkansas Counties, and you know, there are some people who can get pretty upset at the idea of county zoning. Tell me what you have in mind and what you what's driven you to this point of bringing up that kind of an issue.
Well, first and fundamentally, I don't think government has the right to tell anybody what to do with their private property. I mean, I think that's very much emblazoned in our Constitution. I think there's probably been some bloodshed over that over the years. But the issue we have in Washington County is we do have zoning through a process called a conditional use permit or a CUP, C-U-P, and it is an egregious overstep of government in my mind right now. And so what it is what we're trying to propose is a fix. Now, if I thought we had the support on the quorum court to completely do away with zoning, I think that would be an avenue to do. I don't think we have the votes for that. And, you know, honestly, now that I watch the growth of our county, Washington County is very unique, even amongst our larger county peers that, you know, I don't have to tell anybody, we're taking a rural county urban. I mean, that process is going to take a number of decades, but that's where we're at right now. And so what we see right now in the county is it's a patchwork of what we're using our property for. That is very frustrating to people, and so we're dealing with that right now. Where somebody would like to go put a business in our county, well, they're just going wherever they want to. It's aggravating the agricultural nature of our county, which I think the agricultural and rural areas, I think, do need to be protected. It's frustrating from a county resource standpoint because if we're looking at infrastructure and where we need to invest our money, well, I need to go where, you know, the businesses are, the populated areas. We can't plan for that either if we're just patchworking this county. And so what I would like to do and what this ordinance that we're proposing is we are essentially creating zoning in terms of this is what we think this land could be used for. Once again, never would we as government come in and dictate that. But so because I look at it from a developer standpoint, let's say I'm an entrepreneur or a business owner. I want to come to Washington County. I want to bring opportunity and jobs. What does that process look like for me right now? Right now, I have to go buy land, which is not designated as anything. I have to go through engineering, planning, that type of thing, go to the planning board, which is the first governmental body, a bureaucracy that I have to go through. And that might, you know, depending on, go pretty well. The planning board by its nature is usually people that are more technically, you know, we try to put engineers and real estate professional, you know, so they have some interest in this. But, you know, so let's say that goes well. And this is the issue I'm seeing now. They'll get through the planning board with unanimous votes. The neighbors can appeal that to the quorum court always has to ratify the project regardless. But now the neighbors don't like this project. Well, they come to the quorum court. The process starts all over again for that developer or whatever. Basically, the planning board's decision meant nothing to the quorum court. That's what they've demonstrated. And then that's another 50-50 thing. So if I'm the developer, what incentive do I have to come to Washington County right now on a guarantee that these issues and these votes can be completely subjective, you know, just to the whim of what somebody's opinion is of your business, what somebody's opinion is of you, what somebody's opinion is of the neighbor that doesn't like. And so that's very problematic for me. Also, from my standpoint, you know, I sometimes I use an example. I've got an old farm on 412, got frontage on it. What if I thought that was more valuable commercially? Right now, there's no process for that. I just sell it as its current designation. There, you know, there's no process. So I don't think there's a problem by having the citizen petition for a designation of a higher density or whatever you want, a commercial, to make that more marketable. So now we're spurring the free market. We're empowering not only the landowner, but also the developer or whoever might be interested in that piece of property. And then also, you know, I get a lot of blowback about, well, the people wouldn't have a voice. They absolutely have a voice. The quorum court would still designate these areas by the petition of the person, the landowner, whether the developer bought it and now wants to do that. And so I don't think anybody can also argue that with the explosive growth we're seeing, for us to stop and take a breath and make sure we're trying as best we can to encourage the development in the proper places. That's what it's all about.
Well, you know, I'm trying to look at this from the perspective of you know, somebody who may have dealt with a red dirt mine or a quarry or something like that and having fought that fight. you know, it sounds to me like you're talking about a process where a landowner could come and ask for a specific level of zoning, like commercial or industrial or something like that. And it sounds like perhaps that you would be able to do that without a specific use in mind. It would be, I mean, with most city zoning, you kind of have a collection of things that fit within a particular zoning. And so they could come to the county and get permission to have that zoning that fits a wide range of potential uses. And then you're saying when it gets down to the specifics of what they're going to use it for, the public would not at that point have an opportunity to step in.
What these designations have are guardrails on them. Now, I think any time in government where you're trying to come up with solutions like this, you're painting with broad strokes. I don't think there's any zoning that will ever handle the industrial high impact businesses very well. And so those will always, I think, be a very unique discussion. In our current draft form, those would have a specific avenue that they would have to go for. Keep in mind, too, that some of the most controversial things we see are rock quarries and dirt mines and things like that. Those aren't, by their nature, available anywhere in the county. They're very, of course, geographically located for a reason. And I always think that will be a very unique process. And so,
I'm also thinking of things like, I mean, things that we had dealt with in Fayetteville that are, you know, strip clubs or, you know, sexually oriented businesses is what they've called them in Fayetteville over the years, you know, where people come to government and say, you need to save us from this sort of activity that's going to hurt our property values. I mean, you've heard all those sorts of things. So how do you identify? I mean, you're right. The mines are very geographic in that if the materials aren't in the ground, you're not going to put one there. But there are some of these other uses that can be an industrial use that puts off a lot of smell and, you know, things like that. How do you protect people from that?
Well, I mean, I think at the end of the day, so this is the dichotomy of the decision, right? I get a lot of people that say, hey, this is my private property. I do with it what I wish. That gets very conflicted when your neighbor is doing with it what they wish. And so, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to come up with any kind of ordinance that perfectly addresses all these situations. I think we're trying to build in some flexibility there to address some of the more concerning things. But at the end of the day, I guess it just gets down to what you believe personally. I don't think government's going to solve that. You know, I don't think some of these issues is the more government. And I go back to the situation now of what we're doing now is completely egregious. Those are not the types of things we're dealing with at the county. We're dealing with, you know, I come up with an example that it blew me away. We're in a quorum court meeting. So the quorum court hears, like I said, CUPs and then any of the appeals, those come before the quorum court. And they're always very onerous, you know, because at that point, if it's been appealed, you have a conflict between the developer and the citizen or the neighbors or whatever you want to call them. Well, those two parties are huddled up in the back of the quorum court meeting. When the item comes up to them, they come up to the podium and they say, hey, we've come to an agreement between us on the conditions that would make these more palatable. One of the justices says, well, I got more conditions even though you agree. And I'm like, whoa, that's the point right there, is that we've overstepped where we go. I don't think it's a problem to step back into that. And I think this will be an iterative process. So if we come up with issues like this or things where the ordinance isn't going very well, I mean, I think the quorum court, of course, has the ability as the people's representative to build upon it. It's never going to be perfect, though.
But it sounds like your kind of fundamental level is ultimately to have a system that first and foremost says people get to use property the way they want to use property.
Absolutely. You know, that's what we hear. That, and it also, once again, the rub here is the rural county going urban. And those are always going to be issues as the urban areas encroach out on those rural areas. And what we're trying to say is, we want to protect those rural areas as long as we can. We want to preserve our agricultural nature for as long as we can, but also not stifle economic development. It's a, I mean, you get it. It's a horrible balance to have to strike, or it's a very difficult balance to have to strike. Yeah. And so we're taking our best efforts. The one thing I'll say though, and that is, you know, that's the first, some of the criticism I've gotten is, why in the world would you come up with zoning? Well, we're already doing it, and we're doing it very badly. It's a lose-lose right now. And so we absolutely can't continue doing what we're doing right now.
Okay. Well, Judge Deakins, I sure appreciate your time today. We've covered a lot of territory, and I hope you'll come back sometimes.
Anytime. I'm very much available.
All right. Well, thanks for your time. This is Speaking of Arkansas, and I appreciate everybody listening today, and keep an eye out for future editions of Speaking of Arkansas. For now, I'm Greg Harton. We will see you next time.